feels like it's just starting to wind up, and then it starts to wind down. By always, I mean this semester and last semester, I guess. But it's great to see everyone again. It's great to keep going in Hilchos Shabbos. If everyone's willing to hear the regular announcement, you can decide if you'd like to put your video on or not. You can take your surroundings and your situation into consideration. If you're willing to and you're able to, your video on helps the Magid Yashir, and your video on helps you, obviously, to focus, but no one should feel any pressure to. Welcome to Rabbi Leibowitz. At this point, I've said before that it gets boring to introduce Rabbi Leibowitz because I've done it a few times, and you know, as I said, for me, it gets more and more exciting. For everyone else, it probably gets more and more boring. But at this point, I don't think it's necessary, even in terms of our group. This is the fourth or fifth time already Rabbi Leibowitz has joined us. He's not really a guest speaker at this point. He's just part of the program. And it's been like that since the beginning. That's the truth, with his guidance, with his Eitza, and with his help. So without further ado, Rabbi Leibowitz, and we'd like to thank our anonymous sponsors, of course, for sponsoring in honor of Rabbi Leibowitz, Rabbi Leibowitz's appearance. We thank them. And we look forward to hearing wonderful Dibrei Torah from Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Rabbi Steinmetz. It's always a pleasure to join you and to join this wonderful program, this wonderful group of people. I also want to thank my anonymous nieces for sponsoring tonight's shiur. They should have great hatzlacha in everything that they do. Okay, so Rabbi Steinmetz suggested that what we speak about this evening is those salt and pepper shakers that come with the grinders, that you can grind the pepper into your soup. From a halachic perspective, can you use these things on Shabbos? Let's talk about the pepper shakers, and most of what we say applies to salt, although it's a little bit different when it comes to salt, but we'll take one item at a time. So there are really four halachic issues that I can think of when it comes to those pepper shakers, right? Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Should I post a picture of it? The pepper shakers that come with the whole peppers in the thing, and you twist it, and it turns into, yeah, you know what I'm talking about, right? Okay, Rabbi Steinmetz will show you a picture otherwise. He sent me a picture in case I didn't understand what he was talking about. There are four halachic issues that I am aware of. One issue is the malacha of tochein, which I understand is on the curriculum for this week. Another issue is the malacha of mirakeid, which is a malacha that is not so widely studied, perhaps. A third potential issue is the malacha of bishul, as it may relate to putting things into putting something that's uncooked into a hot soup or something like that. And a fourth potential issue is not a Hilchos Shabbos issue at all, but is an issue that may be the primary issue when thinking about buying these items, and that is tevilas kelim. That these shakers have that which grinds them is a metal blade, or at the very least, there's a pole in it that's made out of metal that makes the blades go. And even if the blades are plastic, there is a metal implement that makes the whole thing work, that makes the whole contraption work. And even if the rest of it is made of plastic, maybe that's a tevilas kelim issue that you can't use it unless you empty out all the peppers and then do a tevilas kelim and then put all the peppers back, which would be an issue, obviously, even during the week as well. But we're going to try to focus a little bit more on Hilchos Shabbos, considering that this is a Hilchos Shabbos shiur that you all signed up for. You didn't sign up for a Tevilas Kelim shiur right now. So as far as tochin is concerned, tochin was done in the Mishkan either when they produced certain dyes, which had to be ground up and mixed in water in order to be effective, or in the grinding of the wheat that produced the lechem apanim. The Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayis and Masechet Shabbos Tafayim Gimel defines tochein as breaking down a large item into a lot of tiny little particles. Question is, exactly how small must it be chopped to constitute grinding as opposed to, let's say, cutting, right? If I take, if I have vegetables on my plate and I cut them in order to eat them, that would not be tochein. So how small would it have to be in order to be considered grinding as opposed to cutting? The majority of the Rishonim, Rashi, the Rabbeinu Chananel, and Shabbos Daf Ayin Dalid, and Tosfos and Kuf Yud Aleph Beis say that it has to be cut into very tiny pieces in order for it to be called grinding, to the extent that that you wouldn't even use it the same way that you would have used it before. If you were to chop wood, let's say, into teeny tiny pieces, now you use it for landscaping. You no longer use it to make a chair or to make a, to build something solid out of it. But when you cut vegetables, vegetables for a salad, the same way you need a cucumber, you need a cucumber salad as well. However, the smag and the smak assume that even if it's not so tiny, it could still violate the malacha of tochein, and the Bir Halacha recommends trying to be machmir for the sheet of the smag and the smak. Regardless of this machlokas, it is clear that grinding up peppers into tiny little flakes that go into your soup, that for sure is small enough to qualify for tochein. So it would seem that we have a real problem of tochein over here. So in order to figure out if we don't, if there's any way out of the problem of tochein, we need to look at what the exceptions are for the malacha of tochein. So first exception is ein tochein ella begidule karka. There's a machlokes rishonim regarding the limitations on the isur of tochein. Shulchan Aruch paskins and Siman Shin Chaf Aleph Siftes, like the Trumas Hadeshen, that it only applies to things that grow from the ground. And the Mishnah Berurah points out that even those who consider meat to be gidule karka, because after all, animals feed on that which grows from the ground, would be makel over here that chopping meat would not be considered tochein. But nevertheless, peppers that are something that's natural from the ground, and therefore would seem to still be tochein, exception number one does not help us. Second potential exception, ein tochein achar tochein. Rama writes that one is allowed to crush bread into small bread crumbs because ein tochein achar tochein. Further grinding something that was already ground up is not considered a significant act of grinding. So even though the Chayyadim seems to side with those Rishonim who are machmir on that issue, the overwhelming majority of poskim are mekel and assume that there is no violation of tochein. So that if you were to take a cookie and grind it up, even though it was you're crushing it up and the cookie is made of a lot of natural ingredients, if you believe the packaging. So nevertheless, it's still considered tochein because it's not considered tochein because the flour was already ground once. That's the so crushing a cookie or lumpy sugar or a medicine tablet or something like that. That would not be a violation of tochein. That does not seem to help us either. Then there's a third exception to the Malach of Tochein, and that is the Rama writes in Sima Shin Chaf Aleph Sifyut Beis in the name of Tshuvas HaRashba that the entire Isra of Tochein is only an issue if it's not done for immediate use. But if you're doing it for immediate use, there's no problem whatsoever of Tochein. And the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Rashba that the logic for this is that it's considered part of your eating process, which is certainly mutter, just like chewing is mutter. It's not a violation of Tochein. So if it's for immediate use to eat it right away, that's considered to not be a violation of tochein. Ooh, this one might help us, because after all, you're putting spices in your soup to then immediately eat your soup. So the Mishnah Berurah in Sifkat Memhei quotes a Magen Avram, who does not apply this exemption, because how can you permit all malachas that you happen to need immediately? How could that just get rid of the malacha? So because of that opinion that the Mishnah Berurah quotes, the Mishnah Berurah says in the name of the Beis Yosef that even when intending to use it immediately, you should try not to cut it into such tiny pieces. Furthermore, most of the poskim assume that if you're using something that's meant to grind, it's a grinding implement, the heter of miyad doesn't apply. Why would that be true? The whole heter of miyad that you're using it right away is that's just how you eat. Once you're using a grinding implement, that's already a sophisticated process that you're putting the item through. I never really use those things that you have to grind up. I don't taste the difference in the pepper. If I have already ground pepper and I put it in my soup, it tastes just the same to me. So if you're not, once you're getting involved in a very sophisticated process, it's hard to call that derech achila, that's just the way that you would normally do it. So it seems that this heter, which is the most likely candidate to help us over here, may not really help us as far as the malacha of tochein is concerned. The fourth heter is that if you do it with a shinui, but shinui over here does not mean with your left hand. Shinui means that you grind it in a way that doesn't make it, that makes it difficult to grind. Like you use the handle of a knife to chop something up. This obviously makes it very easy to grind, whether you do it with your left hand or your right hand, and therefore would not be a heter that would apply over here. So as far as tochein is concerned, it seems seems we've already struck out. We already have an issue as far as tochin is concerned. But it's not only one iser. There's an additional potential concern of merakev. They used to sift in the Mishkan, either when they ground up the herbs, they had to first make it into a very fine powder before they made a nice thick paste out of it, or when they were making the dyes, or when they made the lachem apanim, where they actually sifted the flour for the lachem apanim. So there are other melachos that also relate to separating out impurities, just like merakeh does. There's, for example, borer, there's zora, but merakeh is unique in that it demands that you use a special sifting device. Only when you use a special sifting device is it a violation of merakeh. So there are some rules of merakeh. If you're just using the device to evenly spread it out, but it's not actually sifting anything out, like let's say a regular salt shaker or pepper shaker, why don't you just unscrew the top and pour the whole thing? Because then it will get all over, it will ruin the whole food. You're just using the salt shaker, the pepper shaker, to more evenly spread it out in the soup. That is not a violation of merakeh. The Aruch HaShulchan says that it's merakeh regardless of whether you're sifting the impurities from the pure stuff or vice versa. That's a machlokas achronim. Not everybody agrees, but at the very least, the Egel Tal holds that it's only merakeh if you're picking out the good. So it would turn out it doesn't matter whether you hold merakeh goes both ways or only one way, because if it's not merakeh, then it's borer. Meaning if you're sifting out one from the other, so it's either going to be merakeh or it's going to be borer. You're going to have a problem one way or the other. And there is no heter of miyad by merakeh. Why is there no heter of miyad that you're using it right away? Same reason we said before. If it's going to be, the whole heter of miyad is based on the principle of derech achila. Merakeh requires that you use a special utensil, and that's a sophisticated process. Anything that involves a sophisticated process cannot be defined as part of the eating process. So if you have a salt shaker that has little pieces of rice inside of it to absorb the moisture, that is a serious shaila of merakeh, because you're keeping the rice behind. You don't want the rice to land in your soup. You only want the salt to come through. If you strain noodles with a colander, that is a serious problem of merakeh. If you have young children or older children who act young that only want the clear broth of the soup and they don't want the vegetables in the soup, and you're going to sift it through a strainer in order to give them the clearest soup, that is a problem of merakeh and chinuch habanim. There is a third issue of bishul, which we're not going to get into too much detail about. Generally speaking, klisheni, when a hot food is in a klisheni, it doesn't have the capacity to be mevashel, but there is such a concept called kale habishel, things that are very easily cooked and can even become cooked in a klisheni. And some poskim, many poskim suggest that if we don't know that a food is not kale habishel, we have to assume it is kale habishel. That the default position is that all foods that we don't know otherwise, the Mishnah Berurah writes this, we have to assume is kale habishel. The only thing is, the Gemara is pretty explicit that spices, tavlin, are not kalei bishul. So to put spices in a klisheni would not violate bishul. However, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach points out that that's talking about if you were to actually take that utensil that we're talking about, unscrew it, and just pour those big chunks of pepper in, that would not be kalei bishul. That would be permissible from a bishul perspective. But says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, once you grind it so finely and you make the spices into these very finely ground pieces, that becomes kalei habishul, even though it's tavlin, even though it's spices. So you do have a shaila of kalei habishul over here. Now, thankfully, there is what to be makel with when you're putting spices in soup, because certainly salt is often pre-cooked, but even spices in soup, because most often soup is, at least the machlok saposkim, might be considered to be in a klishlishi by the time it's in your bowl. So there's a little more to be somich on lekula. By the way, this is why some poskim many poskim, I would say most poskim, are machmir not to make tea in a kli sheni. Tea seems to be a classic example of a tavlin. It just gives some flavor. You don't eat the tea, it just gives some flavor to the water. It should not be kalei abishal. Oh, but the tea bags have such finely ground up tea leaves that maybe that makes it kalei abishal. Moreno Agon Rav Shechter Shlita believes that tea is not kalei abishal, that it's a tavlin, and therefore it's not kalei abishal. And he said that he heard from Rav Soloveitchik that Rav Soloveitchik's grandfather made tea in a kli sheni. Rav Soloveitchik's grandfather was a very big Talmud Chacham, and I think I once asked Rav Shechter which grandfather, and he said, was it Rav Elia Prajner or was it Rav Chaim Soloveitchik? They were both big Talmud Chacham, one more famous than the other, and I think he said that they both did. So I asked Rav Shechter, do you make tea in a kli sheni without using kli shlishi? He said, only when I'm thirsty for tea. So he does occasionally make tea in the cliche. That's not the majority opinion of poskim, but it is an opinion of poskim. Kalei abishal means that which is very easily cooked and will even be cooked by something that is not such a high level of intensity of heat. Like a cliche, normally the heat is not so intensely hot and is not enough to cook. But kalei abishal means something so easily cooked that it will even be cooked in such a thing. I'm way over my time just to quickly mention the Tevilas Kelim issue is a real issue. Back in the year Tavshin Samach Vav, there was a whole back and forth in the OU office between Rav Belsky and Rav Shechter, where they wrote four or five tshuvas back and forth to each other about whether the OU can give Ashkacha on these apparatuses because they're concerned that people are going to buy them and not even think of the Tevilas Kelim issue. And in the end of the day, they were both machmir, that if there's that metal rod in the middle that allows the whole kli to work. Based on a Ramah, they were both machmir. In the last tshuva that Rav Belsky wrote on the topic, he thought he had a couple of potential rayas from Mishnayos and Maseches Kelim that maybe would suggest a leniency about it. And Rav Shechter's final word was, Mechoser Yediyasi Be'inyane Mishnayos Kelim, because I don't really understand Kelim as well as Rav Belsky, Lo Nirim Lishnei Chidush Manal. I reject both of his Chidushim. And he says, Ubepshu, I think, according to what it says in Shulchan Aruch, you need to do tevila on these kelim, and therefore he did not believe that the OU should give Ashkach. I don't know what the current OU position is, but that was the tshuva written back in Tavshin Samach Vav. Again, I thank you so much for inviting me to share some Divrei Torah. I apologize if I moved a little bit quickly, and I look forward to the opportunity to learn with you again in the future, Be'ezras Hashem.
Oh, man, we look forward as well. Thank you.